I'm going to get through it again. So welcome, everybody.
Radio.
I want to welcome everybody. So welcome everybody on Blog Talk Radio. Got you guys on here now as well. So we're going to go ahead and get started with the show. And remember, if you're on my Patreon, send in show ideas, subject matter that you want to carry. If you're on Facebook, YouTube, send in your show ideas as well. Of course, Patreon get first dibs at their questions, which is where this question actually is coming from. It's coming from someone who's on Patreon who had a question about, they want to talk about the real devil. So we had a side conversation about it, and we decided that it would be a good blog talk to talk about the real devil, not the one that you've been given by society and religion and such. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And yes, as with anything with me, it gets very historical. We're going to go back in way, way, way back in the past. And like everything else, I expect you guys to go and do research about it. Don't take my word for it by itself. Go read, research, study. Matter of fact, I'm going to challenge you to travel to some of these different places and go into the museums and go to the sites of these places and see stuff for yourself. Stop just taking people's word for it. Stop just reading books for it, but actually get out and go see some things. It's a whole nother story. It's a whole nother thought process. Like I told you guys before, when the first time I got to Israel and they say you're going through the eye of a needle, and I had saw a camel a week prior, and this doorway is like 6 feet high, or it's like 8 feet high, 6 feet, 6 feet wide. And I'm thinking, wow, a camel can easily walk through here. And then a guy who wound up becoming one of my mentors happened to see me, explained to me what it was about, what the allegory of that story was, of that parable. And then it like opened up my eyes some more, because it was already wide, opened my eyes up. And from there, he became, we had pen pals back then, it was pre-internet, pre-email, and we became pen pals, and I learned a lot from him. He was a museum curator. So you got to go out and travel and see some of these things and see some of these places. You got to, save your money, stop going to the same beaches all the time, and let's go to Israel, let's go to Egypt, let's go to let's go to Lake Titicaca. Let's, go to these places and see these sites. Go into the Apsu and Southern Africa where they got these ancient human civilizations next to ancient gold mines. Go see this stuff so that when you read it in the Sumerian tablets, you can then say, oh, you know what? I went and saw the ancient gold mines. So, yeah, I seen it. Right. So, anyway, will the real devil please stand up? The devil is an interesting concept, interesting thought. If you were on Patreon with me last year, we did a study of Napoleon Hill's book, Outwitting the Devil. So, and that's what created the conversation between me and the person on my Patreon, because they was like, okay, I understand Napoleon Hill. I watched all your videos on Outwitting the Devil, went and read the book, Outwitting the Devil, and I'm not getting paid for promoting that book. It's a great book to read. But I want to understand, the person was like, I really want to understand how this devil was created, why it is what it is today, and what's the history on it, and where do some of the ideas come from. And that's what we're going to break down tonight. So in order to really get that started, we have to go back into some of the earlier stages of this generation of man. And for record's sake, all we have is about the last 8,000-9,000 years of documented records of people who wrote stuff down. Now, I would say this a million times over. Just because somebody 8,000 years ago wrote down that the gods came and did this, that, and the third, doesn't mean that they were actually gods. Just because somebody wrote a story about something, doesn't mean that validates that it was legit and they were so super honest. So just because somebody writes something, if you can't compare it to the natural order of the universe, if it goes flawed against the natural order of the universe, there's a problem in there. So I say that because when you go back and you think about earliest man of documentation of record that we have, there was always this one question, right? There's always this one question. Oh, the topic says Dale. Oh, we got to correct that. Oh, man, it sure does. we can correct. I think I can correct that as I'm doing this. Let's see. The topic is wrong on YouTube. That is funny. That is funny. Let's see if we can correct it. I have to move this up a little. Sorry, Facebook, but I can't see. So I think it's correct. It's correcting itself right now as we speak. Changes have been saved. That is so funny. That is so funny to me. That was Vandale on YouTube. Which means that on all the advertising board, it says Dale. So people are probably wondering, like, what the heck are we talking about tonight? Wow, that's messed up. That's good. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me know. You know, hey, nobody's perfect. I'm certainly am not. But driving in the rain, but watching. Be careful when you're driving. Be careful with your drive over that road. So let's go back. Ancient Orient, or ancient people, far back as we can go, when we talk about human civilization, and people, they had a thought. There was a thought that was ringing through the minds of people back in the day. And it's still a thought that we have today, but we've canonized the thought and we've made an anthropomorphic being based on the thought. How you doing, Rita? Rika, appreciate you being here. So right now we have a being. We have somebody we can put it on. And we're going to work in reverse order. Today we have somebody, we can put it on a person, we can put it on a being, we can say that these negative things in life happen because of this being. But back in the day, 12,000 years ago, 15,000 years ago, the earliest records that we have is like back at 8,000 years ago, of people having these conversations, and they couldn't understand why does the crops not come in? Why did somebody die? Why did my house burn down? Why did this person get sick? Why did my child die in childbirth? Why did my wife die in childbirth? You know, why did all these things happen? They didn't have a reason, a rationale. Now, if you guys are with me on Patreon, you know we're doing a study of the doubt. And one of the, and I should have had it written right now, but one of the thing that we're going to, the next video, and one of the things to say is that death and life are born together. Death and life are born together. That sound and silence are merged into one, that there is unity. See, nature has this perfect unity, but early man couldn't really understand that. Like, that concept was a little bit foreign, because they said that I see goodness, I see why the tree grows and it produces fruit, but then why does this tree, it rots and it dies? So they had to have a way to explain that, and what they found is duality. They said that there had to be a duality, so there had to be, just as well as there is the sun, there is the moon. This is where there is light, there is dark. So just as well as great things happen, there have to be negative things happen. And then as they began to give those positive things deity, they had to give the negative things deity as well. Some of those earliest forms of negativity weren't a devil. It was multiple types of spirits. It was, you know, gremlins. Well, we might call it today like gremlins, right? Or they had the little, in the world of the Wiccans, there's these little evil children who come in and they try to destroy your house, you know, in the, if you don't protect your house, they're coming in and tear stuff up. So there's misbehaving children, or there's misbehaving little imps and nymphs and all these kind of things. So there has to be a duality. If there's something great, there has to be something negative. If there's a being that's good, there has to be a being that's negative. Oh, all the way from Zimbabwe. That's right. You do live there. So there's this duality, and they had to create it. So they began to create these dualities for themselves, and that's why they created all these spirits. But then as power and control gets into play, as government performs, then they began to create God. They create Zeus, Jupiter, they create, you know, they create Kali, and they create Brahma, and they begin to create, you know, this god and that god. So gods now begin to, are created, and these gods have creation. And this is the god of the mountain, this is the god, goddess of the river, you know, and that's how they begin to explain nature and explain the universe around them. They looked into the sky, and they saw that, man, that's shaped like a bear, that's shaped like a spoon, that's shaped like something that they can be familiar with, and they created story and made them into God. and goddesses, and then demigods. But at the same time that you create Venus, the goddess of love, you got to create Mars, the goddess of war. So they began to make their dualities within their creation, and they created these different gods. Well, certain gods began to stand out when it came to the negative things that happened. In the world of the Greeks and the Romans, which dominates our cultures of today, you had Pan and Hades began to be created. And because the majority of people that listen, the audience here, are from the Abrahamic traditions, we grew up understanding most of the Abrahamic traditions, we're going to stick there because, I mean, if I went through every group, the Buddhist, if I went to Durga and go through the Hindu and go through the Wiccans and the Hopi Indians, the Aztec Mayans, and the Orishas, the Yoruba, I mean, it's like we'll be here all week. We're here all week because everybody has the same basic formula. And that's that there's a good God, or God, there is a negative counterpart. So as they begin to create those, then we see the formulation of this devil character, right? So you got that, you got Pan. The reason why I'm gonna bring up Pan a lot because Pan is like the forebearer for our Abrahamic religion. For people who are in Abrahamic religion, Pan is your forebearer. This is why in the story, Pontius Pilate's wife, she cries out to Pan when she's like feeling the heartache from the fact that she believes this innocent man is being tortured. You know, she calls out that Pan had a vision and Pan was in the vision because she's calling out the negative energy, the devil aspect. So you have the Greeks and Romans starting in, but even before the Greeks and the Romans, in that area of the world, you had the Sumerians. Now, the Sumerians is pretty interesting because it's a lot of family warfare. The Anunnaki are called from heaven to earth they came, or as some people like to say, from heaven to earth they fell, right? And the reason why I'm saying they fell is because we think fallen angels. Because what's the story that most people have heard about? Most people have heard about, oh, there was a war in heaven. It was led by Lucifer because he wanted to be God. And once he lost, him and his one-third of the angels, they were the fallen angels, and they were cast to prison on earth, which became hell. So that's the common story that most people hear, but they don't know where it comes from. Those stories come from the Sumerians, and they come from the Book of Enoch. It's a combination of the two. And we're going to look at a few aspects of that so that you can understand why. And it gives you a clear picture on this devil character, right? So before we go into the Abrahamic portion of this. So when we look at the Sumerian, one of the first people I want you to think about is the two brothers, Enki and Enlil. Enki and Enlil. Now, if you've seen some of my other videos, you know, according to the Sumerians, which was written about 8,000 years ago, and it was written about 5,000 it was about 5,000 plus years, 5,000-6,000 years before the first Abrahamic words are put on paper or any kind of stone or put on paper, it wasn't good this though. But before that was ever created, you had the Sumerian story with Enki and Enlil, who are two brothers. Enlil is the more purebred brother who is set up to adapt, who is set up to become the next king, the next ruler of Earth and Nibiru. And his brother, who is the child of a concubine and his dad, right? Then you have Enki, but Enki is more loving, more in charge. Y'all give me one pause. I gotta run and grab something real quick.
Hold on, I'll be right back.
So, sorry, please forgive me for that. So, Enki and Enlil are two brothers. Now, the deal is, Enlil is more militaristic. Enki is more of a scientist. But they don't like each other. Enki wants power, but knows he can't get it through birthright means. So, he tries to get power different ways. And one of the ways, in that, you get where Enki's symbol is a serpent. I mean, there's a lot more about Enki and a lot more about Enlil. But one of the things about Enki's symbol is the serpent. So when you read the book, because remember, Abraham came from the city of Ur. Ur is a Sumerian city. He would have known the Sumerian story. Now I'm saying Sumerian, S-U, not Sumerian, S-A. Sumerians are much later. There are a jump from Babylonians and all these other people. So make sure you understand which group I'm talking about. So as he's, Enki is coming from, that's where he comes, he's coming from that point of view. And he likes the, he's that serpent symbol. So when you hear about serpents in the garden, you have to understand, Enlil wanted mankind, according to the Sumerian story, to stay stupid, stay dumb, not know all their Anunnaki powers and magic and skills, that didn't want them to be able to reproduce. But Enki, who liked the human, wanted man to have the knowledge. Man, Enlil saw that man was tilling the soil, and he came to Enki and said, you know, and you can read this in the Lost Book of Enki by Zachariah Sitchin as well. But if you learn cuneiform, you can read it yourself. But he's tells him that, like, you know, how did man learn how to, you know, they're tilling the soil, and Enki is like, they figured it out. Every time man would have this jump in knowledge, Enki would just say, man figured it out. When in truth, he, according to the story, he told man. Like, the Sumerians gave all the credit. We didn't know how to irrigate, but the gods told us. We didn't know how to farm, but the gods told us. We didn't know how to make bricks, but the gods told us. So that was always how it went. Wendell asked, how does mining gold factor in? Well, that's on a little offshoot. The reason why the Anunnaki came to Earth is because they were searching for gold, because when you smelt gold down and get it to a monatomic level and scatter it in the atmosphere, it reflects the sunlight, the harmful rays of the sunlight back out to space. And Nibiru supposedly had so many wars that their ozone layer was jacked up, and that's how they was fixing their ozone layer, by spreading this monatomic gold into the atmosphere. So when gold was found on Earth by Lama, Enki came down, beat his butt, took his spaceship basically, and called back and said, hey, Anu, there's gold down here. And that's when the whole mining operation started on Earth, which is why you got ancient gold mines in sub-Sahara Africa that are over 200,000 years old, right? Because that's supposedly where Enki was down messing with man's genome, and they would start their first gold mining operation down there, and then they started mining up into the middle, into Mesopotamia, which is why when I was kid, one of the first things that interested me is, like, why did the story of Genesis said, you know, and there was much gold in the land? When it talks about, like, it describes the Garden of Eden, there were these rivers, and the Python, and the Euphrates, and all this, the Tigris, and it says, and there was much gold in the land. I was like, why does God need gold? You know, I was like 12 years old wondering, why does God need gold? But then, once I read the Anunnaki story, I said, oh, God needed gold because they need to fix their atmosphere. So that's where gold comes into play. That was first. Plus, the spill-off from the monatomic is called the Elixir of Life, which is that philosopher's stone, which is supposed to be, like, super healing of any kind of issues. And if you know, if you have certain metals in your body, if you have the right amount, then your body conducts its electrical impulses better and faster, and the energy is never lost. So that is also the aspect of why gold is so important. So a little sidestep there. So let's come right back. But because Enlil didn't like his brother Enki, when Enlil took over, when he grabbed Abraham and said, I like you, you keep the old ways, and I want to make you my main dude, of course, I'm paraphrasing. Enlil proceeded to make Enki the bad guy. So the serpent who told man that they can have the knowledge of good and evil, speak from the tree of knowledge, is Enki, he's the bad guy. So one of your first forms of the devil in the Abrahamic religion actually comes from Enki being a serpent deal, and having a serpent symbol, not the reptilian, but the serpent symbol. Then he becomes your first idea of the devil as far as people reading the current version of the Abrahamic religious book. Now, if you go beyond that, you have to start out with what? and started with the Book of Enoch, which is not in the canonized book, and the Samaritan story, which both tell of a rebellion, but multiple and different types of rebellion are talked about. One of the first rebellion and or wars is the fact that you have 200. So the Sumerian version, a little bit different than the Book of Enoch version, but very similar. In the Sumerian version, I'm paraphrasing, you got gold mine, you got miner, transportation miner people on Mars, which is why you got that whole base on Mars, pyramid on Mars, that whole thing. You got, they're working on Mars. So the gold was shipped from Earth to Mars. You got 200 of those dudes up on Mars. After a while, they get ticked, and they're like, look, we need to come down to Earth more. We need to visit more. We need to hang out. We need some rest. Y'all are working us. And this whole big thing goes down with Anu as to the problem with them, you know, with that whole thing being a problem. And am I getting my timeline messed up? First, it was Marduk. I meant to. It was Marduk, and then it goes to the gold miner rebellion. Marduk, who is Enki's son, is at war with Enlil over who's going to rule the earth. So Marduk, Enki's son, starts a war. He's controlling Egypt, Ethiopia, and he has a lot of humans who like him. He's hanging out around the pyramids. He's calling himself Ra, and he's saying that he is the god. So Marduk is like starting war, and the whole Tower of Babel is Marduk building a tower so that he can shoot rockets at Enlil's forces. Enlil bombs the tower of Babel to destroy it, and then they say they confuse their language. and Babel doesn't mean that. I want y'all to go look up what Babel means. And then an old world understanding of the word Babel. And then Marduk also, he's holding up in Sodom and Gomorrah. Enlil bombs that, but a radiation cloud goes and destroys seven cities that belong to Enlil. So that's why in your Bible says that it killed that one, those two cities, but then it decimated with a death cloud over seven other cities. Sound like a radiation cloud to me. Because Marduk is having this war, the war is fought in the sky. That's why when you look at the pyramids in Egypt, when you go to the Aztecs and the Mayans, they got these little dudes in rocket ships. The Hindus got these gods fighting a war in rocket chariots. You know, you can see Hindu paintings and pictures of rocket chariots of the gods fighting. So they got all this going on. You know, they're telling you that the gods were fighting in the war, and fighting in the air, that there was this rebellion, that this fight. It's Marduk's forces fighting Enlil's forces. Marduk's forces loses, and they're cast down. They're told that they are isolated in Egypt now. They can't leave Egypt, all his forces. So they are the fallen. And when they fail, Marduk decides, well, forget it. Since I can never be king, there's no reason for me to get with one of my family members, which is their incestuous way of keeping their bloodline. So Marduk decides he's going to marry a human. Right? And since Marduk is going to marry a human, some of the other gold miners, some of the other miners who had been just watching the fight, they like, well, look, if Marduk can marry a human, we want a human. So Marduk's getting married on the top of this mountain, and the whole wedding party is there, and these 200 dudes swoop in, they grab up them some human wives, and they proceed to marry them. And when the Anunnaki council is like, y'all can't do that. They like, if you let Marduk do it, you gotta let us do it. So they say, yeah. Now there's a whole thing about a blood pact being done. There's a dude named Azazel. Is it Azazel or Samael? It might be Samael. But there's this whole dude. He's like, he was the leader of them. So he was called, you know, he's the primary leading them into this fallen. Same way Lucifer leads them into this fallen idea. So you got that story with him. Now, some people say that Marduk at this time was also named as Samayaza, right? Because both Marduk and Samayaza were fallen, so to speak, and then they were imprisoned into, they were fallen, fell onto the earth, imprisoned into the Great Pyramids, and left there to die. but then after a while was released. Now, what does that sound like? That sounds like the red dragon in Revelation, right? The combination that he fell from the sky, he fell, he was put into chains in prison, but for a little while, she'll be released and let loose on the earth before the final battle occurs, right? You've heard that story before. That's because Samyaza and Marduk both encountered a similar story. They fought against God, they lost, they were put into a prison on earth, and then, but at the end of time, they're going to be let go. Well, in their version, they were let go and were spared death, whereas the red dragon will be let go for a while before he's in prison forever. So Samyaza is also that image of the red dragon and that idea of the great dragon in Revelation. And you, if you're catching on, you're going to get where I'm going with all of this, is how it's a bunch of compilations. I'm going to tell you the answer now. It's a bunch of compilations. Right? So we had that with them. Now, in the Enochian story, it's a little bit different. The Enochian story is where most people in the Abrahamic religions get their entire idea of a war in heaven and then the fallen angels, because it is the war in heaven led by the Lucifer. So it's Lucifer, the most beautiful. And that's a weird thing. Lucifer was this beautiful angel, according to Enoch. Looked great, handsome, debonair, suave, James Bond in the sky kind of guy, right? But of course, he looks different. I'm going to get back to why he looks different now. And it's not because of a curse or anything. Doctrine and human mindsets will tell you that. But in the Enochian story, Lucifer says, I want to be God. I want to be in charge. Now, what does that sound like? Marduk. Marduk said, it's my time to rule. I'm supposed to be in charge of Nibiru. You know, it's my turn. So he was pissed. But they wouldn't let him be in charge. So he was like, well, forget it. I'm going to be the king of the earth. I'm going to call myself Ra. And I'm changing all the stories to fit to say that I created everything. And I'm in charge now. I'm the creator. Because I need to be bigger than Enlil and bigger than Anu. So Marduk said that. Lucifer, pretty much in the story of Enoch, does the same thing. I want to be bigger than God. I want to create my own universe. I should be running things. Man should have free will. Everything should have free will. We shouldn't just have to praise you. So I'm in charge. And then he leads a group that fights. It always goes like a third of the number in the stars, which is like billions. And of course they lose. Because here's the thought. Let's be a little bit logical now. I'm 47 years old. Imagine me being 47 years old, the size I am right now, forever. And here's Lucifer, a three-year-old child. Greetings, Queen Nubia, a three-year-old child. And greetings, Ashanti, a three-year-old child. A three-year-old child will never beat me in a fight, ever. Ever. All right. Lucifer was also in Freemason. Not really. That's a conspiracy theory that is not even there. That's not true. That's something that's just been forced upon by the anti-Masonic party from about 100 years ago. Not even part of it. You can't worship Lucifer and be a Freemason. And even when you go to the higher levels, it's still not there. That's something the anti-Masonic party started. No conspiracy. Sorry. I hear that all the time, and there's absolutely no evidence of that other than what people who have never been a Mason make up, and people who have lied make up. But we're going to go back. Now, there is Luciferian thought, Luciferian teaching, but it's not a worship of a Lucifer. So there is a major difference. There's a Luciferian, there's the Lucifer experiment, but that is not that. Okay, that is a synthetic Merkaba being created. So let's get deeper in that one, all right? But anyway, go back a little bit. My Enoch. Enoch is in the Enochian story. So Lucifer wants to take over, wants to be in charge, right? And it kind of goes with the Luciferian experiment of want to create a synthetic world that is not based in nature, a universe of his own that he can control. But it doesn't work. It fails miserably, right? And it's a failure in that fight. So in Enoch, I mean, in the book of Enoch, Lucifer fights, they lose. But then, it's a rainbow color. But then Lucifer then becomes this guy who leads them down into this fight and got trapped there on Earth. Now, while they're on Earth, they're not this chained up type situation. They're just watching over man. They're governing man. And 200 of them become the watchers. Right? They become the watchers. Now, these watchers, initially, they with the goat and just watching over man. But then the daughters of men start looking good. That is part of in the Genesis version. The daughters of men start looking good, and so the watchers started having sex with them. And just like the story of the Nephilim, just like the story is in Genesis, the sons of God start looking at the daughters of men and start thinking they're beautiful, and then they get with them. They start having babies. They teach them their Enochian magic or teach them their Anunnaki ways, and then all of a sudden they start having babies. These babies become a giant. And first they're men of great renown. I always found that interesting. First they're described as men of great renown. But then the egotism gets the better of them and they start destroying stuff and killing people and making folks worship them and all that sort of thing. So that's how the story in Enoch, that's the summary of how the Enoch story goes. So according to Enoch, the devil, Lucifer, or no, the devil, is more of a governor over man on earth as his punishment for fighting against God, right? So that's how that story goes. So, and here's the thing, guys, in all of this, you have to put all of this together. All of this goes together, right? So that's where that part comes. So both the Sumerians and Enoch both have this 200 coming down and start liking women and start teaching them their magic, which is just science at a level that people didn't understand. And they then have babies, they create giants, then God, then in both all the stories, God get mad. I did a video about the Noah flood and how stupid that was, and I did one about the Nephilim with Enlil and Enki, because Noah is Enki's son in that story. So that's how you still have Nephilim post-flood. But all these things are making up this character, the devil. We're compiling it. And when you actually research beyond the canonized Bible that Muslim Jews and Christians read, the canonized Torah, the first part of the book, you'll see that it's not all the same. Like some of the stuff is repetitive, some of the things don't match. And that's because they're the first one version is written called the J text, that's the Judas text. The other one, which is written by the tribe of Judah and it favors the tribe of Judah. Then you've got the Elulis text, which is written by what becomes the tribe of Israel. And then you have the D text, which is the Deuteronomy text. And then you have the P text, which is the priest text. Then what you have in your Bible today, your Qurans, your Torahs, your Pentateuch, is what's called the J-E or D-P. It is, depending on which verses, where you're reading and what you're reading, those are redacted. Those are the redactors, where they've taken elements. This is why there's a creation of 6 days, and then God didn't make the rain, and he actually recreated everything. It's because you got D-text, and you got that's a J and E-text mixed together, right? This is why you have Abraham saw the face of God, knew the name of God, but then Moses, you know, you can't look at the face of God or you die, kind of thing, because you got redactors who are putting them, you know, trying to combine them as best they can, but they know they can't leave certain things out. So they just stuck them in there and just figured that their power was great enough that you weren't going to question them, because then they could say, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't have the spirit of God and all that kind of stuff. So you have to understand how these texts came about. And that's why there is all these differences. This is why the devil is so different in these books. Because when you look at the Abrahamic religion, you look at all the different versions of it. The devil had a war in heaven. Which, where in the Bible does it say that? That there was a war in heaven? That it tells the story of it. Where does it come from? It's referenced in the New Testament and some parts of the Old. It's referenced, but there is nothing that tells you how it happened because it was in the book of Enoch. And it was a Sumerian story. But as time went on, as hundreds of years went by, and the canonization and the figuring out what the doctrine is going to be, they took out the book of Enoch. They took out the Sumerian story, and they just said, it's pretty much a doctrine that we teach, that since Paul referenced it, it must have happened. But if it must have happened, the book that says it happened should be in the book. But they took that book out, because you can't have the book of Enoch in there. The book of Enoch says that Noah was an albino. Can't have that, because then white people would be like, oh, then people can say white people came from the albino gene, you know, and since white people were in charge when this was canonized, can't have that. That's not going to work. But it also talked about how the Watchers were good. They were good at first. They was cool, and they was teaching people magic, and they had these abilities, and they were able to manipulate nature and all the kind of stuff, and resurrect people, and, you know, heal people and live for, like, extended periods of time. Can't have that in there either, because the book of Enoch is telling you that as well. So you couldn't have it. So they had to take the book out. They left the reference. Right. So first, the first idea is this Lucifer who wars against God, right? And then the second version was the serpent. So if you put it in order, because you got to have a war, which I always find interesting. The war against God supposedly happened before the creation. So why were they warring? Because evidently angels already had freedom of choice. They already had free will. Because without free will, then one, Lucifer can't rebel if you don't have free will. Two, he can't convince a third of the angels to join him if he doesn't have free will. So they already have free will. They just want to create their own stuff. But if the universe hadn't been created yet, why is Lucifer saying, I want to create my own universe? There is no universe created yet. There is just God and all the angels. But where are they? What are they doing? What piece of land are they on? And then, of course, that's where the earth and the universe was created as a prison for Lucifer and his billions of angels that rebelled. So where is it? That's the stuff that don't make that makes no sense, because the war happened before creation happened. So is this the second time? Is that why the older version of the Bible said, let man let man and woman be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth? You ever notice the older ones say replenish the earth? They don't say fill the earth. They've changed. Your new one, because that had came into question, so many questions were going on about that in the 90s and the late early 2000s. Now it says they fill the earth. But it used to say they replenish the earth. That's what it originally was saying. What do you say? Earth is a prison for Satan. Makes sense. It operates like that nowadays. And I did a video where I was talking about, like, as I was about 17, 18 years old, and I was like, maybe the earth is a prison, and maybe all the billions of people on this planet are the spirit of the angels that rebelled, and this is your time. You're here as punishment to get your, and the better you get your life right, get your mind right, and recognize universal power and how the universe works, maybe that's how you leave this fleshly form and get into your spirit form again. And like, my bad, dude. You know, it was a thought I had when I was in like 17, 18. I did a video about that one, too. But it's an interesting thought. I still don't know that one goes, man. It's a possibility. You can't say it's not a possibility. Regardless of your senses, you can't say that because you can't prove it. But so that was the first thing. It was the war in heaven. Then it was the serpent. Then all of a sudden he was a serpent. So you go from being war in heaven with all his angels, supposedly cast into a prison on earth as a prison, but then all of a sudden, now he's a serpent, which goes back to Enki being the serpent, who having a symbol of a serpent, goes back to Enki wanting man to know the difference between good and to eat from the tree of knowledge, to be knowledgeable, to have no science, basically. So he becomes this serpent who tempts man. Then he becomes, Lucifer becomes the accuser. Now this one always threw me off. Always threw me off. The book of Job starts out talking about God looking down on Job. Job, the man, Job doing good. He got money, he got a wife, he got a bunch of kids. Kids doing great. Everybody in the land loves Job. Job is great. And God's like, look at my dude, Job. Job is on point. That's my dude. And the accuser, Satan, the devil, the Satan, is in heaven. And God like, what you been doing, bro? Okay. Both be omnipresent. Why are you asking somebody where they been if you omnipresent? But hey, let's just say God purposely don't want to know. So he said, where you been? Right? There's no more to get back to heaven when they accomplish their mission. Yep, when they come and help Noah. That's what that thought I had when I was 17. So these things are really on the Sumerian tablets. Yeah, they are on the Sumerian tablets. I learned how I taught myself cuneiform like a long time ago because I didn't want to just depend on somebody else's interpretation. Yeah, but they're like on the Sumerian tablets, they're like 200,000 Sumerian tablets that was found. So it's tons of them. So yeah, accuser, Job. So, and he's like, hey dude, where you been? He's like, oh, I've been going to and fro. From heaven and earth. Okay, if the devil during the war of heaven was lost and was read the lost book of Enki by Zachariah Sitchin. It's a good book because it's a Sumerian story. So the devil in the Bible, in the book of Job, was cast down. Right? Right, if gambling is a sin, why is God gambling with Job's soul? Exactly why he gambled. Right? Because God is all knowing and he knew the end result, that Job would remain faithful. He was trying to teach the devil a lesson. I was told that by a pastor once. He was trying to teach the devil a lesson. But if the devil is already condemned, why are you trying to teach him a lesson? There's no reason to teach him a lesson. Well, it's whether it's for us, but whatever. So, but he's going back and forth. He's going back and forth. If the devil was cast into a prison and that prison was on earth, how is the devil up in heaven having a conversation with God at the meeting, when they have a meeting? You know, they have a backroom meeting, talking about, you know, they have a Knights of the Round Table meeting. How he rolling up in there and he's supposed to be the devil? He's supposed to be cast down. He's supposed to be with the fallen angel. He's supposed to be in a prison on earth, the devil, right? Not in Revelations. I know I said that before in another video. These guys are foolish about it. Like, no, he's in the lake of fire. And he's gonna, no. No, in Job, he's going back and forth, right? He's going back and forth. Yeah, I know. I'm shaking my head too, Shondell. So he's going back and forth, and he's the accuser. The accuser is more like a job. It's not who you are. It's a job. It's just like you're a teacher. It's a job. That's not who you are. It's just your job. So he's the accuser. So his job is to make accusations. He's a prosecutor. They have in court up in heaven. You can't have court without a prosecutor. So God, like, where you been, dude? He's like, oh, you know, I'm going back and forth. He's like, check out my dude, Job. Yeah, check out Job. But the only reason Job acting like that is because he's eating everything. You got him all protected. You let me at him, you know, it'd be a whole nother story. But the dude is just an accuser. He's just an accuser. Yeah, the Adam and Eve story is all over the but their names are going to be like Adamon, Adapai, and Kiki, and Abel, and Cain. The name is slightly different, but they close enough, right? But the story is pretty much the same. And Adam and Eve brothers are going to this marriage. Half brother, half sister. So you got them. So he's making all these. So he's the accuser who's going back and forth from heaven. All right. So that's another composite of who the devil is. But he's breaking it. You know, he ain't doing it right. He's breaking the rules here. He's supposed to be in hell. Right. And then. You got that statement about Lucifer. Sorry, I'm not using that. Right? Let me see. I don't want to miss any of this. Too many questions. Yeah, why did Job's family have to die over a bet? Because God is... Because it's Enlil. It's Enlil and Enki. It ain't God. It's Enlil. Enlil is crazy as hell, basically. Right? Enlil do some jacked up stuff. So the other idea you had Lucifer, and then, you know, that was Lucifer supposed to be in the war in heaven and all that kind of thing. But the thing about Lucifer is that verse. There's only two times the word Lucifer is used in the Bible. When you look at the Hebrew version, it's used in Revelation and it's used in, I forgot the book that it's used in, but it talks about, oh, how you fallen from grace, from sky and all that kind of stuff. But he's also called the morning star. And one, Lucifer is describing a king of Babylon. And the other one, the word Lucifer is used to describe Jesus. I'm just saying. But Lucifer as a character, that's the only time it's been there. God did Job in at the devil's request. Oh, God did Job in at the devil's request. Actually, no, I'm going to disagree with you, Wendell, because when you read the story, the accuser, which is not the devil, the accuser, because how is the devil in heaven? If God cannot be where there is evil, how can the devil be up in heaven? If the devil was cast down after the rebellion, how can the devil be in heaven? So the accuser, the prosecutor, was minding his own business. God said, according to the story, God says, hey, dude, where you been? I've been going back and forth. Have you noticed Job? Yes, I did. Job is faithful and true, only because you protect him. But if you give me a shot at him, he won't be. I bet you he won't. God took the bet. No, it's not the devil's request. The devil was led into that. He wasn't even thinking about Job. Wasn't even considering Job until God said something about it, right? So, I've listened to some Ray Hayden, so he has some good teaching as well. So this whole Lucifer idea just needs to be buried in. Lucifer means morning star. Lucifer can also be referring to the morning star, which you can see every morning, that's Venus, all right? And then the morning star is overshadowed by the sun, the S-U-N. So when you look at Lucifer, you also have to look at it. Other than the Luciferian experiment by creating a synthetic Mercury, you also, and that's a whole other conversation we're not having tonight, but I'm looking this way because this way is east for me. Every morning in my meditation, I see the morning star. I see Lucifer in the morning star. When it is the first star that comes up from behind the moon, and it rises, which is Venus right now. Below it will be Mars right now. And then the sun comes up. Once the sun issuing comes up, it overtakes the power, the light of the morning star. So it overwhelms Lucifer. Okay? Astrologically, that's where Lucifer is. It's Venus. It's the morning star. Right, you see it every morning. Every morning, go look. Right, and if you can see it every morning now, probably saw it every morning then. Right, the next time you get, the devil only can kill 10 people at God's command, but God killed 2.5 million. Exactly. And who we say is evil? Yeah. So Jesus is the S-U-N. Yes. Astrologically, he's the S-U-N, which is why Da Vinci and all those guys, they knew that. That's why they painted that. That's one of the reasons why they gave him a halo. Because the sun has always been worshipped. The sun has always been worshipped, given a deity in every culture as a light bringer, as a sustainer, as a savior from the darkness, as a giver of life. The sun, S-U-N, because they tricked people thinking like, give me some money, I'll shake my rattle, and I'll make the sun come up tomorrow. And keep doing it. Oh, your phone started messing up. That's my nephew. Boy. Hey, don't worry about it. They ain't going to be able to stop it. They can't stop it. Internet's too big. So the next first time you see a devil character, it's Satan, right? You got Jesus, right? CIA. Right? They're looking at my nephew. You got the tempter. So you got this devil who comes to tempt Jesus, right? Now, this is not the first time you had this. And when you start reading these Sumerian stories and all these other stories, you will see these different tempter gods and goddess and deities who come to tempt people. Ilnana, Ishtar, she tempted man by saying that if you can sleep with me, she believed that if you slept with her and And you were immortal if you slept with her and didn't die. So she would tempt men to sleep with her so that she didn't die. And they didn't die. She tried to tempt Gilgamesh, and then he wouldn't do it. So then she gave him all the path. You'll find these temptation people all over throughout. In the in different animism religions, you'll see a tempter god all over the place. So so they took this same character and moved him over into Jesus, where you got that he's tempting Jesus for 40 days, 40 nights, and that sort of thing. And so now he's the tempter. He promised him all the kingdoms of the earth and make these promises. And this is also because, oh, he knows the word of God. He knows the Bible. You know, so he's this tempter. And after that, he's the dragon. We already talked about how he's the dragon and where that came from, right? But one thing that's interesting, if you read the Bible, it never mentions hell. At one time, they use the word hell. Never talks about going to hell. Never talks about what hell looks like. Now, some people say, oh, the Hebrews called it Sheol. Sheol is not hell. Sheol is two things. It's two things. See, I've been to hell and back twice. Outside of every city in Israel and Mesopotamia, for that matter, there's a garbage dump area. That garbage dump is called Sheol, called hell, right? There's what Sheol. That's where the gnashing of teeth, that's where the bank, the robbers and the looters and the dregs of society also live there, right? Nemo drowned, but I see. But they live there. So there's abandoned. It's like the worst of the hood, the worst than the hood kind of place to be, like where there is no law. So Sheol is one, a garbage dump, dregs of society, outcast place in outside of the city walls in a Mesopotamian city. So that's the first place where Sheol is. Now, what happened is, in the Hebrew, the esoteric thought process of Sheol became a place where you cease to exist, because it's just like here in Atlanta. We got what's called, you got 10 cities under the seven bridges. I refer to people like who live there and they're invisible because we drive past them every day. We go and do our life every day and we pay them no attention. They're invisible. They're completely, completely invisible, right? So in the ancient Hebraic Kabbalic idea, the people in Sheol, the people who live in this trash heap area, they were invisible. Society just ignores them. So the metaphysical thought process of Sheol became where you don't exist anymore. You cease to exist. You see, Jewish people don't have a place where you go in and you're tormented forever. They don't have that. They don't have it. That's a later creation, a much, much later creation. The early Christians didn't have a place that you went to and you were tormented forever. The early Christians only believed that the dragon and the angels that rebelled against God were the only ones who were going to be beaten and gnashing of teeth and killed and go through all this pain and anguish for eternity. If you didn't follow God in the way, then you just ceased to exist, because they were all coming from the Hebrew, and that's what the Hebrew meant with Sheol. So hell actually came from, with the Greeks and the Romans, they had Hades. Because in the Egyptians and many others, you either cease to exist or you go and live in a heaven kind of purgatory kind of place. But then Hades was the Greeks and the Romans, a place of torment, a place where all kind of crazy stuff is happening for all eternity. It started being created from them, and they already had God there, which is why when Dante wrote his Divine Comedy, otherwise known as Dante's Inferno, he described hell with these six or seven layers of heaven. That got your purgatory, your limbo, and all these different, depending upon how evil you were, how jacked up you were, you went to these different levels of hell, right? So, because Dante wrote that, and Dante pulled from the fact that he was European, Christ, the Romans had Pan, the Romans and Greeks had Pan, which is why now the devil, Lucifer, went from this beautiful angelic being to this monstrous goat-looking being, because Pan is an animal, half-free animal-man combination, and people had kind of like a weirding out of that, that weirded them out. So he described the devil as having horns and a tail and all that kind of stuff, and then it was based off Pan. After he did that, so did everybody else. They started making the devil this horrible, ugly creature. If you were to go to like the Vatican Museum, like the real Vatican Museum, not the little fake one that they let you go into when you go through St. Peter's Basilica, if you go to the real one, then you'll see all, prior to Dante's Inferno, every painting that they created that is supposed to be in Lucifer, it was a good-looking dude. It was a good-looking dude. You go through the museums in Israel, you know, the accuser is just as angelic as everybody else. So Dante created this hideous creature idea of it. And then you also have that creation coming from the idea of jinn, which is from the Islamic teaching. The Islamic teaching. Okay, so you are a Christian. You walk around talking like you got an angel on this side, a devil on this side, or angel on this side, and a little demon on this side. That comes from the Muslim. That's the jinn. They're not angels. They're not demons. They're just jinn, like the genie, right? So you got them on both sides, and once they're telling you get something good, they'll tell you something bad. But what does that really go to? It goes to your brain. It goes to you, your personality. It goes to the fact that, so I was walking out the store yesterday, the other day, and this woman, she bent over, and I mean straight leg bent over to pick up something. And that bad jinn was telling me to go there and just push her over. For no reason, push her over. But then the good jinn was like, you know that's not right. She's gonna fall, hit her head, hurt herself. And for what? For your amusement? That's not right. You should apologize to yourself for that one. Right? That's the idea of the jinn. It's just my brain telling me, you know, the impulse to do one thing, but the right thing to do. But in the Islamic, that's what you have. You have the jinn. Shake your head and both will go away. Exactly. It only makes sense because who's seduced and persuaded by something that looks horrifying? It does. I mean, you got to think about it. Dante is writing his Divine Comedy. Is Shakespeare Shakespeare if the stories aren't good? If the stories written on the walls in Egypt, are they good? Do they last if the stories aren't good? Are they retold if the stories aren't good? The narrative must be good. Zeus would be boring if he didn't, you know, his mother hid him, and then when he grew up, he became a mighty warrior, and he fought his dad, and he killed his dad, and then he freed his brothers and sisters, and they all attacked him, and they freed all the other, you know, gods that he had eaten, and then they killed all the titans and took over the universe, and he sits upon Olympus with his thunderbolt, having sex with women and creating demigods so that more adventures can continue. If it's not a good dang on story, you're not going to listen to it. You're not going to like it. That's why movies keep repeating themselves over and over again. The same storyline keeps going over and over again. That's why I can't stand watching some stuff, because you'll see, like, why does everybody keep secrets in every television show? Then the secret is revealed, and they're like, I should have told you, and all this kind of stuff. But I thought you'd be mad, or I was trying to protect you. It's the same storyline over and over again. That's why I can't stand TV. All storylines are the same. If Dante didn't write a good story, the devil is just got horns and got a tail, and it's burning red, and all these teeth coming out, and he's going to convince him to sell his soul, and he goes down, and there's, you know, if you're not loving God, all these demons are pulling on you and snatching you. You know, it's a horrifying story, but then the hero makes it out. It's a good story, and it stuck. Because Dante's Divine Comedy stuck, we get an artist began to paint in that format. We get all your horns and heads and all that. You know, the devil look like this, and the devil look like that, and demons look like this, and demons look like that. If you are a true believer in your Abrahamic religion, then guess what? You should be looking at the beautiful people. They the ones. those are your demons and devils. You know, what did Prince say? The beautiful ones are the ones that hurt you, that always hurt you. Those are the ones. It ain't the one that looks horrible. It ain't the one. I'm going to be really, really superficial for a second. How many guys, how many times have you seen a dude who got everything going for him? Look good, got a good job, take care of himself, living pretty well, handling his money right. He got a woman on his arm that you like, God, dog, how in the world? Let me tell you how that happened. She treat him like a king. She treat him so right. But the beautiful one, they ain't got to work. They ain't got to put down no effort. They pretty. People just come to them. They don't have to do no work, so they can treat you like crap. The beautiful one. So if you go back to your Abrahamic religion, it's the beautiful one. The fallen angels are supposed to be beautiful. Lucifer was supposed to be beautiful. You know, handsome dude. So Dante flipped that script. And now got people walking around thinking that the devil is this Baphomet or this dude with a tail on him. Now, even in the Hindu, they went that way. Durga, all of a sudden, is this evil-looking demon that comes and challenges the Buddha when he's sitting under the Bodhi tree and finally it comes to enlightenment and challenges him on whether his existence and everything. And the whole world testifies to Buddha, is the way that story goes. But, you know, even in that story, once the enlightened one comes, here comes the demon. You got to have that. Here's the enlightened one. Here's the darkness. Here's the good one. Here's the evil one. You got to have that contrast. So that's how you get all these different ideas and stories that all put together to come up to a devil. And it's all about mind control. It's all about fear. It's all about fear and mind control. At some point in history, somebody realized that if I can make you afraid that you will die and you will go to a place of torment, I can control you. Because before that, when the Abrahamic thought process was, you die, you just cease to exist. If you did well, you go to heaven, but if you didn't, you just cease to exist. You become invisible, like the people in the trash, like the homeless, the people that we forget about. They become invisible, right? That's all that happens. You cease to exist. Before the Abrahamic religion, it was you either went and lived with the God, or guess what? You cease to exist again. It was the same story. You cease to exist. You just don't live anymore. Your consciousness dissipates into the ether. Or whatever happens to it. But that's what they was believing. That's what they was teaching. There was no afterlife. Actually, Marduk is one of the first progenitors of telling the humans that there is an after, that if you worship the gods, meaning him, you will go and live with the gods when you die. You will go live with me when you die if you worship me. Right? Marduk, when he changed his name to Ra, was one of the first ones to start teaching that doctrine, right? And that started in Egypt about 8,000 years ago. Well, technically written about 8,000 years ago, but as they tell it, written 8,000 years ago, but they had started doing it 26,000 years prior. So, but that's just somebody writing it down on a clay tablet 8,000 years ago. So, but these are all the different places you get this devil, right? But I think the Muslims have a piece of it that is probably the most accurate, that if you were doing the study with me with outwitting the devil, devil is that negative portion of your brain. The devil is you. The reason why you can have heaven and hell on earth is because your perspective creates your own heaven and hell. Your life choices create your own heaven and hell. If you decide that you're gonna stop working. You got a house, you ain't going to work no more. Eventually, your lights get turned off. Eventually, your water gets turned off. Eventually, you don't have any food. Eventually, you get kicked out your house and you're living on the street. And if you decide you wanna be a butthole to your family, eventually, nobody lets you stay with them. Eventually, you living on the street, begging for change, and you begging for everything, going to soup kitchens, You outside right now in Atlanta, 30, 40, 20-something degrees, 30-something degrees, you freezing cold, you feel like you're in hell. Or you got money. You got all that money. But you ain't got no love in your life. You ain't got no family. You don't have kids. You don't have nobody loves you. Nobody's with you because they really love you. They with you because you got some money. They with you because you got some items that you can buy them because they're going to use you. And then you commit suicide because you felt like you were living in hell. That's hell. You had traumas in your life and you're still holding on to those traumas. You're allowing those traumas to keep you from being able to live your life, be able to find happiness, to be able to enjoy a job, to enjoy friends and family because, you know, you were molested or you was raped or you was beaten or you got cheated on or whatever, and you're still holding on to those traumas. And now you're living inside yourself in a hell. You're creating your own heaven and hell. You chasing after stuff that you probably never going to get. But you're chasing at the expense of everything else around you. I've never heard of anybody on their deathbed said, I wish I had spent more time at work. I wish I had spent more time, you know, ignoring the hell out of my family. I wish I had spent more time, you know, with being lonely. No, people always say they wish they spent more time with family. I wish I spent more time with my husband or with my wife. I wish I would have spent more time traveling. I wish I would have spent more time studying. I wish I would have spent more time, you know, experiencing life. You're trapped in your own hell. It's in your mind. The Satan, the accuser, is in your own mind. When you say that, man, I got a great business idea, but then you start shooting, you the first one to shoot it down. You the first one to find out a problem with it. You your own accuser. You your own, like me get like Ali. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer. You are my opposer because you are the one that's in the mirror. See, I'm myself on camera. So you are my opposer. So the Satan, the real Satan is you. Inside you. Satan is a made-up creation. I mean, I just gave you guys like an hour's worth of information where Satan is created from the Sumerians, from the book of Enoch, from the different versions in the Abrahamic religion. Man's living in a fear, man afraid of darkness. And that's not even dealing with the Hindu and the Buddhist and the Aboriginals in Australia and the Samoans and all these other people. That's just dealing with a small group, right, of how it's all compiled together. So it's not an anthropomorphic being. It's not a real being. It's not an entity that walks around with a pitchfork. I mean, why does he have Poseidon's pitchfork? That makes no sense, right? It's not a real being. The real being is you. The real being is you. You told a pastor that, yeah, no pastor is going to accept that because if a pastor starts teaching, look at what happened to the dude. I did a video about him. He started teaching that there's no hell. They kicked that joker right out of his Azusa thing. So you gotta realize that the devil never made you do it. You made you do it. That there's no devil that's stopping you from living your life, from being happy. You stopped you. Yeah, saw his story on Netflix. Carlson Pearson, one of them. But you stop your own life. You your own devil. That's why I love alchemy. That's why I meditate. That's why I surround myself with plant life and light, right? Because I know that the only devil in my life is the one that I allow in my brain, the one I allow in my energy. When I purposely do things that's negative. Like, the Church of Satan is interesting because of their one line, which also Aleister Crowley talked about with the Golden Dawn, and that is, do what thou wilt. I just have one caveat to that. Do what thou wilt with my little Declaration of Independence. Do what thou wilt as long as it doesn't trample on another person's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Let me explain. I believe everybody has a right to life. You can't murder anybody. You can't steal somebody's life. When you can't abuse somebody, because when you abuse somebody, you're taking their life. Everybody has a right to liberty. Everybody should be free. You should be free to come and go and do as you please. should be able to stand on the street as a black man and not get harassed by a cop. You should be able to be a young teenage black boy, walk down the street with a hoodie on and not get harassed by a fake neighborhood watch. You should be able, this is not going to be popular, you should be able to stand and support, you should be able to be a white person standing and supporting Trump. And as long as you're not stealing from anybody or hurting anybody else, if you're just standing there with a sign, you should be able to stand there with your sign, regardless if I agree with you or not. You still should be able to have the liberty, the freedom to stand there with your sign. But as soon as you start taking my liberty, as soon as you put me in a prison, as soon as you put me in a prison falsely, as soon as you put me into slavery, as soon as you tell me that I can't speak, as soon as you tell me that I can't say what I want to say, as soon as you start forcing your religious beliefs and your national beliefs and your cultural beliefs on me, as soon as you start pushing your racial beliefs on me and saying that I must believe that, you're taking my liberty. And then your pursuit of happiness. Competition happens. Not everybody's going to win, but you should be allowed to chase your dream, to pursue whatever it is that makes you happy. If living on an island by your damn self makes you happy, you should be able to pursue that. If living in the city makes you happy, pursue it. If having one wife makes you happy, pursue it. If having two wives makes you happy, pursue it. If having two husbands makes you happy, pursue it. If being gay makes you happy, as long as you ain't trying to force me to be gay or force me to have to do anything concerning it, do it. You should be able to pursue happiness in however form. As long as you're not raping somebody, molesting some children, stealing from people, killing people, stopping other people from being able to walk through a park or do whatever, you should be able to do what thou wilt. And even though the Church of Satan gets hammered about that, which I think they're all undercover atheists personally, because none of them really believe that, I ain't gonna say none of them, but most of them don't believe a Satan character actually exists, right? They're like undercover atheists. You should be able to do that because this devil creature has been made up. This devil creature, this hell is a made-up place. You're not going to hell. No one's going to hell. No one. You know, I love it in Ziggy Marley, in his song, Love Is My Religion. You know, he says, nobody's going to lose their soul. You're not going to lose your soul. Stop being afraid to step away from religion. Stop being afraid to step away from when you know a pastor is not teaching you right. A priest is not teaching right. An imam is not teaching right. Don't be afraid to step away from it. Think about it. In Muslim hell, this is how asinine it is. In Muslim hell, you wake up in the morning. First of all, you're in eternity. You wake up in the morning, so you went to sleep. They take a knife and they skin you alive. Take all your skin off, roll it back. Burn you all day. So I guess you got a burning clock going. And then, after they finish burning you all day, you go back to your house, you heal all night, and in the morning you got a fresh set of skin, and you repeat the process. Kind of stupid-ass thing is that? If I'm going to burn you for all eternity, why am I doing all that work? You know, you go in hell, you stand around like, you know, I used to peel potatoes, I used to peel onions, I would peel my apples. You know, I'm so skilled at peeling, I peel grapes. You know, skin off grape. I can peel the skin off a grape, you know, in 3 seconds flat. So, what, you get the job as a skin peeler in Muslim hell? Kind of stupid thing is that. It makes sense. But that's what they say. That's what they teach. For you infidels, you're going to go to Muslim hell. Oh, yeah. So, for all the Christians who say, well, I'd rather believe in Jesus because if I'm wrong, then what do I have to lose? You know, because I lose nothing if I'm wrong. If the Muslim is right, you lose a lot. You go to Muslim hell. But you get your skin peeled back, right? So my thing is, none of it exists. Hell doesn't exist. Not in this afterworld. Unless you believe it hard enough that you're going to hell. I do believe, because your consciousness is energy. Energy never dies. That I believe your consciousness stays intact. And when you leave this existence, you're going somewhere. Guess where you're going? Wherever your subconscious believes you deserve to go. Not the one your conscious brain is telling you, because I believe in Jesus, I worship Allah, I'm going to heaven. Nope. It's that subconscious brain. It's that doubt that you got in the back of your mind. that doubt that is ruled by the fear that they put in you about hell, your ass is going to hell. You're going straight to hell. 99% of y'all who believe that you're going to heaven, you're actually going to hell. Whether you're Christian, Jew, Muslim, whatever, all y'all going to hell. Because that's what the back of your mind really believes. That's what your subconscious really believes. And that's what you need to be working on, is how to transmutate that negative thought, that negative energy of this devil that they put in your mind, this hell that they put in your mind, into the realization that it doesn't exist. And when your conscious mind, your subconscious mind realizes it doesn't exist, guess what starts happening? Your hell on earth starts to cease to exist. I can tell how much doubt I have in my subconscious brain by how my perception of this world is right now. I can tell. And I'm not saying that you're walking around with no doubt, because people are going to disappoint you. Life is not always going to go your way, but your perspective on it, your perspective on it. When I got divorced from my kid's mother, I thought that my subconscious was in a state where I didn't think that negative things can happen in my life. But I literally was so depressed and thinking I was going to hell, that life was going to be so bad, everything was so jacked up, and I'm done for. You know, I can never recover from this. My kids are never going to recover. I've stained my kids. You know, I didn't realize I had so many negative thoughts in my brain. But it wasn't until I sat there with my kids for so many weeks meditating. I mean, they're like 12 and like 7 and 8. And we meditating until I really started getting that negativity out of my kids showed me the heaven. So when the Bible does say to come to me like these little children, yeah, I looked at my children and I learned from them how to get the negative portion and find that beauty, find that heaven in everyday life. So if you walk around scared of if I don't do this, I'm going to hell, you're going to hell because you believe in it too much. The more you start discovering your own spirituality within, I lost it, but within, the more these religious books sound like they were written. Scripture. Exactly. And if you really want a book to understand how that thought process, the Gospel of Thomas, read that one, Gospel According to Thomas. That one, a lot of esoteric speaking about how this is the poverty of the flesh, and you are a divine being. You have divinity within you. You don't need anything outside you, that you are the creator of your own universe. At least the Mormons teach, even though they don't believe black people don't do it, they teach it now that black people can, but prior to 1970, black people couldn't go to heaven, but unless they were servants of white people. But in Mormons, they say that once you have a divine marriage here on earth, you and that divine person, when y'all die, y'all go and start your own universe, where you're the god and goddess of your own universe. So in their version, you everybody going to heaven, except black people. In the Gospel of Mary, where Peter asked the Savior, what is the sin of the world? He answered, there is no sin, but it is you who make it sin, no devil mentioned. Exactly. That's another one. The Gospel of Mary is found with the Gospel of Thomas in the Nag Hammadi Library. In the Nag Hammadi Library. So if you want to know more about the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Mary, the Secret Writings of Peter, find the Nag Hammadi Library. I know people are scared to death, especially religious people. Yeah, the Gospel of Thomas was taken out. I mean, it takes away. The Gospel of Thomas tells you that you don't need a pastor, you don't need a priest, you don't need the church building, you don't need none of that stuff. All that, everything is already within you, that there's nothing outside you. You know, we should break that book down. I think I don't have anything scheduled for next week, so we might break down the Gospel of Thomas next week, some of the key points of it. Because I really love that book. I do. That's one of the writings. It has great wisdom in it. You know, not that I'm saying, your Gospel of Thomas is a real testimony of Jesus. No, it just has great wisdom in it for you to understand your true divinity, yourself. So we'll probably do that one next week. Yep, the other Bible is a good book to read. I haven't read that one. Let's do it. Yeah, I think we'll do the Gospel of Thomas next week. So we're going to go ahead and get ready to close this out, guys. Man, I almost got It's almost an hour and a half. I want to keep these down to an hour and a half. That way, you know, we don't get caught up in the 50-11 extra conversation. When I edit this video, the only edit that I'm going to do is at the end, I'm going to throw up two videos people can you can click on if you're watching this later on. If you supported me on Patreon, I appreciate it. Continue to give me ideas. You know, give me ideas for shows, because I want these shows to be about you guys and what you want to talk about. It's simply another name for the Apocrypha. But I want this channel to be about things. I want to do more. Although I have videos that I want to talk about things, subject matters that I want to get across to you guys, I really want this channel to be for y'all. For things that you want to talk about, you want to learn, you want to discover, we want to grow in, because we're growing together. We're growing together. You know, every time I do a video, even though I did a video about this like some years ago, just to go back and pull the research from it, and you know, more knowledge has been gained since then. It's like, okay, here's some things I can add to it. I can add more to it. So thank you, I appreciate it. And I appreciate the love, Janae. But yeah, so if you're on Facebook, please go and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Even if you watch everything on Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube, man. You know, there's an audience over there. I appreciate it. But for everybody who supports on Patreon, I appreciate you guys. Everybody who's here on Facebook and YouTube, appreciate you. Blog Talk Radio, I appreciate you guys as well. It's a great thing. We're going to continue to grow this. We're going to grow this temple of wisdom so that we can, because I want to start meeting with people face to face and have this temple, whole temple of wisdom thing going. And create a safe place for people to go and learn without the pressure of having to conform to anything. And not conform to anything. Yeah, we'll teach things like alchemy and meditation and hermetics, but we'll teach wisdom from every book, every journal. You know, we'll pull wisdom from everywhere. And that's what you should be doing, pulling wisdom from everywhere, Because Solomon was right. There's nothing new under the sun, because all that wisdom is all over the world. You know, Marcus Aurelius wrote in his journals, you know, how at the end of the day, it's up to you. It's up to you to be able to discover what it is that you need for yourself. That life is up to you, right? So I want you guys to have that. I want you guys to have all that, because, you know, it's great that we get to share it. So I'm going to end this. Appreciate you guys. Love you guys. Remember, you have to free yourself to be yourself. Because your greatness is non-negotiable. Oh, one last thing. The Alchemy Tour of Life. I'm changing that because so many people say they're not close to the cities that I was talking about, or it's too far away. They want to learn it now. We're going to have a webinar on fixing and building the credit. So if you're watching this old, go to coachfriends.com. I haven't put it up there yet. Today is January 22nd. I'll probably have it up by February 1st. But we're going to have that as a webinar to make it so that people from anywhere and everywhere can learn how to fix our credit. Because I'm telling you, you might be living in hell because your finances is jacked up. If you get your finances right, you'll be living in heaven. Or at least you're in hell, but in a much nicer place. So y'all have a great day. Watch these other videos. Y'all, good night. Enjoy yourself. Love y'all. I'm so glad the Saints didn't make it to the Super Bowl because they cannot come to my city and play. And I'm leaving on that note. So free yourself and be yourself, because your greatness is non-negotiable. And we're going to end that one. Thank you, Facebook guys. Appreciate you guys. And Blog Talk. Appreciate you guys as well.